Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Sex without a condom is the new engagement ring. My generation has known the threat of HIV/AIDS our entire lives.
You know, a ring is very temporary, and you can sort of just take that ring off. Whereas, you know, if you don't use condoms and you get an STD, then it's sort of a much less temporary result of your engagement than a tan line on your finger.
That is a new radio show from NPR, National Pubic Radio. With your tax dollars, these degenerate vermin, the degenerate vermin at NPR are telling your children to have sex without a condom and that getting an STD is more permanent than a ring on her finger. Now, I've said to you for a long while, liberalism is a mental disorder, and you've agreed with me. But don't you think it's time that we woke up the mentally deranged Congress? Isn't it time that we woke the mentally deranged Congress up from their stupor and said, cut off all funding to NPR, National Pubic Radio, because they're committing a danger for our children? They're encouraging our children to engage in sex without a condom and encouraging them to get an STD, saying that it's a badge of honor. We wouldn't call an STD a red badge of courage, but I could give it another name, but this is a family show right now. So that's what we're dealing with. Here's another little story related to the mental illness called liberalism. This came out of a website called Russia Today, and I linked it up on michaelsavage.com. A new survey published in Britain suggests that 1 in 5 members of the British Parliament has suffered from stress-related mental health problems. In other words, they're psycho cases. 20% of British Parliament are psychos. I would say this study is way off the mark. I'd say it's closer to 80% of the British Parliament are psychos. To have permitted the terrorists to come in and breed like mink, to permit the terrorists to move in from Pakistan and breed like mink and then say, we're going to convert you to Islam and kill you, and to be wasting their time on the junk they're wasting their time on. No, it's not 20% of the British Parliament that suffered from mental health problems. It's 80%. But I wonder what the number is in America. What percent of our Congress do you think is on either medication or belongs in a mental hospital? Idiots and lunatics may be given the right to stand for Parliament, exclaims Britain's The Telegraph, and that is exactly the kind of headline that members of the British Parliament feared. Idiots and lunatics may be given the right to stand for Parliament? I would say idiots and lunatics only given the right to stand for Parliament, or only idiots and lunatics would stand for Parliament. Who would run for office in America who is in their right mind? It's always been a question of whether you're in your right mind when you run for office. Going back way before Bill Clinton, it was a question of who would do this to themselves. Who would subject themselves to this kind of scrutiny? Who would subject themselves to this kind of life where you have to beg people for money, where you have to be on your guard every second, where there's no privacy in your life? For what? For what? What are you getting out of it? Well, in the case of the corrupt members of Congress, we know what they're getting out of it. They're getting war profiteering contracts. They're steering them to their husbands or wives or friends. We understand that. But is there no point at which a price is too high? We ask ourselves here in America. Now, I don't ask you to call me about mental health survey stuns British Parliament or that National Pubic Radio is promoting sex without condoms and that they should be defunded. You know that the government will not defund NPR. The government is NPR. Let me repeat that. The government is NPR. The government is National Pubic Radio. The government wants your child to be on drugs. The government wants your child to be a sex maniac. That's where the government can justify its absurd, wasteful programs. There's no other reason for it. Just as the reason they keep putting the two border agents and keep them in jail, rather, on 11-year sentences, even when liberal Democrats have joined conservatives to say 11 years of a sentence for shooting a drug dealer in the butt is too much, Mr. Bush. Bail them out. It was just upheld by a federal court. Why? Because the government wants the drugs to come across the border. The government wants the children to be drug addicted. The government wants the children to have STDs. Don't you understand what I'm saying to you? But what's the use? You know, this is like shoveling you-know-what against the tide. 1-800-449-8255, phone number, michaelsavage.com, website. President Bush comments from the Rose Garden on the energy crisis. Oh, give me a break. The Rose Garden, all I see are thorns. Then we have the other absurdity going on in the country today. Nancy Mussolini Pelosi wants censorship. She would have been happy to live in Mussolini's Italy and been the El Duce. She supports the unfairness doctrine. She wants to kill talk radio. She wants only liberal points of view on radio. Well, I say, Nancy, bring it on, because if you do, I'm going to demand equal time on NBC, CBS, ABC, and CNN. And if you impose a liberal on me, I will impose myself upon your favorites, and you're going to lose. So watch out what you wish for, Nancy, because it just might come to pass. 1 in 5 members of British Parliament have mental illness. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Mussolini Pelosi wants censorship, supports unfairness doctrine. Let's see, what else is new on MichaelSavage.com? There's another big scandal out there. I broke the case when it was first reported. You're not going to give me credit for it. Didn't I tell you when we were told a month or so ago that the tomatoes were contaminated with E. coli, that they were from Mexico? Didn't I tell you the government was covering it up because of agribusiness interests that were controlling the FDA? Didn't I demand that the FDA chief be fired for permitting this to happen and hiding from you the fact that these contaminated crops were coming not from America but from Mexico, where they defecate on their crops, where they urinate in the water that is used to water the plants? So I put the article up. I don't expect any kudos for it. Savage broke this case when it was first reported. They crap on their crops in Mexico. Viva la NAFTA. Let them eat you know what. That's what the government thinks of you. So the Salmonella strain linked to an outbreak in the USA has been found at a Mexican farm. I am so shocked. I'm so shocked. Everyone I ever know who went to Mexico for the last 30 years came back with a thing called turista if they ate vegetables. They were known that. You were known to never eat vegetables in Mexico. Never. You don't eat them. So I'm not supposed to put two and two together because I'm supposed to believe George Bush and Bill Clinton and Nancy Pelosi that NAFTA is good for me? It's not good for me. We're getting contaminated third world products in this country. We're getting third world values in this country. And consequently, we have become a second world nation, which I declared 2 weeks ago. With the breakdown of the value of the dollar, with the influx of 30 million illegal aliens, with the destruction of the mores of our nation, we are now a second-rate nation, or shall I say a second-world nation. There was a Minuteman rally at San Francisco City Hall where a few brave men stood up to the hordes, the mobs of illegal aliens. And you've got to see the signs that these illegal aliens were carrying, trying to scare the Minutemen who patrol the U.S.-Mexican border. The illegal aliens were carrying signs that said, "We were here first, we'll kick you out of our country, just as I've warned you." But if you go to my website, this is very telling. Go to the bottom left picture. You'll see the faces of hate from the third world, of course, with their Spanish signs. The faces of hate with their signs in Spanish. But curiously, there is a man on the left who is not Hispanic, nor is he of African origin, nor I am sure is he an immigrant. He is a white man with sunglasses that looks like he's from Brooklyn and he went to NYU. There's your agitator. Pay attention, ladies and gentlemen, to the Savage Nation. If anyone can identify the white man with the sunglasses who's egging on the third world hordes to take over this country, you'll know who the enemy within is. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Now, I'll tell you, there are so many important topics to talk about, and so that's why I'm going to focus on tomatoes for one segment. I was the first and only talk show host in America to tell you, literally within a day of the tomato scandal, that it was a result of NAFTA and that the tomatoes, contaminated tomatoes, are coming from Mexico, using common sense. Now, to prove it, and I don't expect to be called to Congress for a Presidential Medal of Freedom for this. I don't expect any of you who hate me to acknowledge I'm the smartest man in radio, more often right than wrong. In fact, well, let's leave it at that. This comes from June 9th, 2008, 6908, a month before the government, and it cost me nothing to analyze this other than common sense. Listen, what I want to talk about are tomatoes right now, because the entire nation can be seen through a tomato. Do you know that we once had some of the finest, safest tomatoes, and for that matter, other produce in the world? And then along came NAFTA. That's right. The vermin in the government, along with their friends in agribusiness, wanted to make more money. And they didn't want to be constrained by paying inhumane wages. They wanted to pay slave wages. It wasn't enough that the pigs in agribusiness were paying inhumane wages. Now the pigs wanted to pay slave wages. And wait, there's more to it than that. The pigs in agribusiness were really fed up that they had to use no chemicals like DDT. They were no longer able to use DDT on tomatoes because they were DDT and other dangerous chemicals had been banned in America. So guess what the pigs in agribusiness did? They moved tomato farms down to Mexico with help from the Bush administration, destroying the tomato industry in Florida, virtually wiping it out except for small pockets here in California. And presto magico, we now have contaminated tomatoes with salmonella. That's right, contaminated tomatoes. The world threw a tomato on the Savage Nation. Listen to the montage.
Salmonella outbreak nationwide.
An outbreak of salmonella infections.
Fever, nausea, vomiting, terrible diarrhea.
More than 70 cases have been confirmed.
Yank off tomatoes off the menu.
Others under investigation.
Some kind of sewage.
Rushing to figure out why dozens of people have gotten sick.
Fecal contamination of some sort.
Texas, New Mexico, Arizona.
Terrible diarrhea.
Avoid eating raw tomatoes.
Some kind of sewage. Maybe you should be going to your local farmer's market.
Well, fecal contamination of some sort.
All right, turn terrible off the dimwits from Fox News and the other idiotic channels. Almost all of the contaminated tomatoes are coming from your friends in Mexico where they use human feces on their vegetables. It's been well known for decades that you didn't eat, when you went to Mexico, you did not eat vegetables. Everybody knew that. If you ate vegetables, you got what was known as turista. Turista came from fecal matter on your vegetables. So any gringo who went south of the border knew not to eat raw salad in Mexico. But as a result of the greed in the industry and the government media greed, now that the industries have been transported wholesale to Mexico, we are now inheriting the wind of pollution. That is right. That is correct. Everything is not the bottom line, but when I come back, I will tell you, A, the source of this contamination, which the FDA will not release to you, but I found out what it is. And the FDA chief, in my opinion, for hiding this, should be put in jail for 20 years. Let me tell you something. 20-odd years ago, blood got contaminated. Blood supply was contaminated in France. And you know what the French did? They took their health minister and they put her in prison for a good number of years. She didn't have anything to do with contaminating the blood supply, but it was her job to make certain the blood supply was not contaminated. And when she failed the French people, there was such an outcry that she was put in prison for, I think, 10 years. I would like to see the chairman of the FDA put in jail for 10 years at least. Not so much because he contaminated the tomatoes with salmonella, but because not only did he not prevent this, but he won't even release the facts. See, I'm a tomato lover. I have been most of my adult life, not only because I know the health benefits of tomato. I happen to love all tomato products, tomato sauce, tomato ketchup. But I eat raw tomatoes for breakfast, and I have for 20 years, usually on a bagel in the morning. And I do so because I study the chemistry of the tomato. And we all know, particularly for men who want to receive the health benefits of the particular antioxidant found in tomatoes, that they're good for you. Now, we had no problem with tomatoes in America, by and large, until they started to be imported from Mexico, where, of course, there is no food safety whatsoever. And I only buy tomatoes that are stamped grown in California, and preferably I eat only organically grown tomatoes. However, you can't always find that, particularly if you don't live in California. So there are some general things for you to follow, which is this. there are tomatoes that are not at all involved with this particular outbreak that you can eat. And which are the tomatoes that you can still eat? Well, those are the ones, for example, sold with the vine still attached and tomatoes grown at home. That's obviously, I mean, tomatoes grown at home, fine. If you have a vine attached.
Right here. You heard what I said at the beginning. This was on the 19th of June, 08, when the epidemic was early on, and they wouldn't tell us that it was from, they were from Mexico. So should I get a Presidential Medal of Freedom for this? No, I don't need it. All I need is your medal of listening. The Savage Medal of Listenership is all I need. And I would say, listen to the enemies of the truth at your own risk. Listen to those who have taken me out of context at your own risk. You know, an interesting thing happened to me over the last few days. A gentleman who I knew about a year ago, who I lost contact with, a professional, sent me a letter, a very angry letter, because he has an autistic son. He's a very good conservative male man. And he quoted what he had seen sent to him by an autism group. And he accused me of being this and of being that. And I said, well, you know, what you're accusing me of, maybe you're guilty of, because you actually didn't hear what I said. You're only hearing the excerpt provided by the excerpt of this. And I said, why don't you go to michaelsavage.com and look at the 20 remarks that I actually made about autism and then get back to me. 10 minutes later, he apologized. In his first letter, he demanded an apology and he said he's going to work against me. In the next 10 minutes after going to my website and actually listening to what I said and understanding who I am and what I've done for children and understand who the enemy is of Michael Savage, Media Matters, by the way, the ultra left wing Media Matters, by the way, the far left lobbying group Media Matters, by the way, that distorts and hates anybody who's a conservative, but most particularly and especially yours truly. The gentleman listened to my sound bites. He sent me a letter apologizing. And then he said, I'm going to lobby now with all the autism groups that I am a member of to get that darn sound excerpt off their websites and tell them to stop the campaign against you and to start a campaign against Media Matters. And I sent him a letter back and I said, you're a big man, bigger than most. And I apologize for any pain I may have caused you. But thank you so very much for being open-minded.
Savage.
You know, I am convinced that the mental illness level in the Congress is higher than that in the society as a whole, the general population. They are now conducting hearings on the salmonella probe of the tomatoes, and they're saying that the federal investigators were like Keystone Cops. Now the FDA's food safety chief, Dr. David Acheson, who belongs in prison, in my opinion, said the FDA plans to convene a panel of advisors to review the salmonella investigation. Now, I ask you, if I, Michael Savage, with a mere PhD from the University of California at Berkeley in epidemiology and human nutrition, could figure this out in one day, why does this moron need a panel of advisors that's going to cost probably a couple of $1 million? You know that I'm convinced the government to this day does not know how 9/11 happened and how to prevent the next 9/11. I'm convinced that the people know who caused 9/11 and what needs to be done to stop the next 9/11. But I'm convinced the mentally deranged liars in the government don't even know who caused 9/11 anymore. All they know how to do is take bags of cash in toilets on interstates late at night. I am so fed up, I don't know which way to turn anymore. And that's why I'm the most revered man in talk radio from the point of view of the audience and the most reviled man in talk radio from the point of view of the media. You hear what I just said to you? Beware the government media complex. I warned you about it at a speech at the Commonwealth Club in 1997. Beware the government media complex. So there it is. And now Nancy Pelosi wants the Fairness Doctrine, which of course would kill talk radio as you know it. Now, let me ask you, why does Nancy Mussolini Pelosi, why does Mrs. Mussolini want to kill talk radio? What is it you think that she's hiding in particular? What is it that the others in the Democrat Party are hiding that they want conservative voices killed in talk radio? San Francisco, Zach, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Oh, yes, Dr. Savage. Thanks so much for taking my call. Yeah, Congress is just a joke to me. I mean, we have so many more important issues to be dealing with besides fairness doctrine. I mean, like what happened in the free market? If there is a market for progressive, quote, talk radio, then it'd be on the air. But there's not. So
There is no market for it. There's no market for the Democrat Party either, by the way. There's no market for liberalism. There's no market for socialism, and yet it continues to march against us like a Goliath. I am David facing the Goliath of socialism on this show every day. I am David facing the Goliath of Congress every day. Thank you for the call. What do you want me to do now? I'm getting worked up over nothing here. Is it a tempest in a teapot for me to get so excited over these things? Is it time for the truth, or does the truth not matter to Madam Pelosi, Mussolini's descendant? Now, why do I make reference to Mussolini? Who is Mussolini? Mussolini was the dictator of Italy during leading up to World War II. In many ways, and I'm sorry to tell you this, Nancy Pelosi is starting to act more and more and more like a dictator. And anyone who disagrees with her, she wants to crush or silence. Now, if you want to live in a nation where there is no opposition voice, that's where we're going if you permit this out-of-control Democrat Party to get any fatter like the cockroaches they become. How can you permit this? I don't think there's a person listening to this show who wants to see censorship. But again, I want to warn you, I'm prepared for the battle. If Pelosi wants censorship and supports the unfairness doctrine with her group over there in the far left wing of the Democrat Party, I will sue the government that tries to impose it upon me. And in any settlement, I will insist that I be given free access to counter the liberalism on ABC Nightly News, NBC Nightly News, Meet the Press. I will fight them on 60 Minutes and demand that they have me on 60 Minutes every week to give a conservative point of view and prove that I'm the most radical conservative in the mainstream media, because I am. No matter what they will say, I am. I will then sue CNN for equal time. And so if they want the games to begin, go ahead and begin. Look, I got a lot of battles on my hands right now. It's not easy. But I'm also made of very good stuff. You know, my father came over as an immigrant, and he had a – I'm sorry to tell you. I'm not sorry or not sorry. I mean, my father wasn't a senator. My grandfather wasn't a senator. My father had a push cart on the lower the streets of lower Manhattan. And he worked his way up from the streets to a little store. You might say it was the equivalent of a farmer's market. I went to the farmer's market yesterday. I bought corn from illegal immigrants, two heads for a buck. Then as I was leaving, I saw another stand that had three heads for a buck. Then I bought the plums from another guy. You know, I said, this is beautiful in a way. They have to make a living. They got to get a start in this society. I said, how different is this farmer's market than my father's beginnings in America, where he had to have a push cart because he didn't have the money for a store? And, of course, look, these women and men are not paying taxes. We understand that. But I guess the states and the cities look the other way to give them a chance to get started in our society. How long that will last, I do not know, until they're put out of business because they have to tax them. The governments are going broke from excessive spending, and consequently they're going to tax everything to death. A note to the governments out there, the state, the city, and the federal governments who collect taxes, you may want to look into nonprofit corporations for your first $1 billion. I would especially look at nonprofits like Media Matters and see how come they still have a 501c3 or 4 status and pay no taxes on their millions of dollars of income. Try to justify these nonprofits not paying taxes in a time like this. Instead of raising taxes, you in the tax business, why don't you spend your valuable time investigating nonprofit organizations like Media Matters? Then come to us, the people, and see if you really need a tax raise. And oh, by the way, while you're at it, why doesn't someone do a cost analysis of how broke the states would be if services were cut off to illegal aliens? Now, what if all health benefits in emergency rooms were cut off to illegals and available only to citizens? How many billions would that save your state? What if the schools were closed to the children of illegal aliens? How many billions would that save a state? What if the services that are being paid for by American taxpayers were not granted to illegal aliens, would there be such budget deficits? You know, and I know there wouldn't be. But then why are they still here if the people want us to encourage them to go back to their fair countries? Why are they still here? Because the employers want slave labor. The employers do not want to pay Social Security. The employers do not want to pay health benefits. The very same employers who exported our farms to Mexico and imported cheap labor for the hotel industries, the slaughterhouses, and God knows where else these poor folks have to work, are the problem. They're not the solution. Chicago, Illinois. Eric, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, you make a comment in the beginning of the show about the STDs and condoms. You're absolutely right. The number one cause of STDs in this country and the entire world is HPV, or human papilloma virus. And anybody can Google that in the internet. And condoms do not protect people from getting STDs. And it kills probably more women in this country than even...
Wait. You're arguing that condoms are of no value whatsoever?
In HPV. Do not.
In HPV. And that is because the virus is so small that it penetrates the condom. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Beside that, it's not only in the penis. It can be in the pelvic area, and a woman can get contracted it. And unfortunately, women get cervical cancer with this. Cervical cancer.
So do you think that the spike in cervical cancer is related to the sexual liberation movement?
Absolutely. I mean, the number one cause probably of cervical cancer is HPV. And
well, how come we don't read that in the local newspapers? Is that because it goes against the why not do it in the road movement?
I don't know why. You know, I'm a physician, and I don't know why the medical community listened to this and let this pass by. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Well, because it's extra business. The more sickness, the better for business.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, there was a time when a doctor took an oath to help people. Now he takes an oath to buy as many things as he can, as fast as he can. They're not all like you, Eric. Thank you. Something else to worry about. My mother was right. She probably was right. She said sex is dirty. I didn't believe her when I was young. I laughed at her. You'd say sex dirty. She's from another generation. She'd go, ugh, sex is dirty. And you'd say to her, Ma, how could you say a thing like that? Don't even talk about it to me, she would say. It's disgusting, the whole thing. She came from another universe. All right, get back to me when you're 88 and tell me she didn't know what she was talking about. Somehow she lived to 88 without it. No, it's true. How did she survive? I guess she didn't read the women's magazines. I guess she didn't go on The View. She didn't watch The View with Rosie O'Dumbell, where every minute they're pushing dirty, filthy sex with some... Let me stop right here now. I've had enough trouble this month. When do I turn the page into a new month? July has been a winner for me. July has been a winner for me. I'm watching CNN at the same time. There's the Tin Man marching around now. Why doesn't Cindy run for the presidency for the next month? Can he just shut up and let her campaign for 1 month? I mean, his ratings will go through the ceiling. She is such a class act. I've always been fond of Cindy McCain. I think she's gorgeous. I think she's a very dignified person. I'd love to see her as first lady. Fabulous. Can't they... Hey, wait a minute. Can we, the people, ask both first ladies to campaign for 1 month, and then let's see what happens to the ratings? Yeah, we can ask. Yeah, we can ask. Like we asked for Nancy Pelosi. We all voted and said, please, put Nancy Pelosi into the speaker's chair. The chair once occupied by people as distinguished as Tipsy O'Neill. Oh, God. Let's see. Saudi religious police banned pet cats and dogs. Saudi religious police banned pet cats and dogs. It's a heck of a country, you know. I got to tell you something. Those fundamentalist Muslims are so far ahead of every other religion. They hate cats and dogs. They treat women like cattle. You know, there's really something to be said for it. At least according to CAIR, they're the Council on American Islamic Relations. I haven't heard them say a word about any of these behaviors of you. Instead, they attacked me. Oh, there's a horrible story on the website. That actually, it's really good today. I got to tell you, I got up very early. I have a splitting migraine. But the one on the top right's the best, which is It's a member of the British Parliament in a straitjacket, which is really a classic. I got to thank God for that one. There's one on the left, which is, it's buried. And it's above the LA Times article, "Where Did Obama's Mojo Go?" And it says a new poll shows that despite 9 solid days of blanket media coverage from overseas, the freshman Illinois senator is stuck right where he was in the polls before he left. That's an interesting article. But right above it, Navy blames crew members smoking for costly aircraft carrier fire. A guy smoked, or a girl smoked, I don't know who, on an aircraft carrier, and it caused $70 million in damage to the nuclear-powered aircraft carrier USS George Washington. Now, the captain and the next guy in command were relieved of command. Now, first of all, I think that's absurd. To get somebody with the skills necessary to be a captain of an aircraft carrier, I don't think there's 50 men in the entire Navy who could do that job. This is a classic case of the stupid men at the top hitting the wrong people. Why don't they find out which crew member did it and put him in jail for 50 years instead of firing the captain? How could the captain know someone was smoking down below? Who was it who smoked? Why are you firing the captain? And why are you then firing his XO? This is absurd. Something's wrong with this picture. But, you know, it raises another question. If one cigarette can cause $70 million in damage to the nuclear-powered aircraft carrier USS George Washington, imagine what one Iranian rubber boat can do. It should give you some good sleep tonight to know that the U.S. Navy is in really good hands, that one cigarette can cause $70 million in damage. Just imagine what a rubber boat in the Persian Gulf could do to an aircraft carrier. Oh, boy, the government. They're the problem. They're not the solution. I'll be back. Savage. It is the Savage Nation. It's 53 minutes after the hour. I'm still here. I'm not going anywhere. That's all. I mean, this is it. Look, the show is like an aircraft carrier. We took water in a few compartments, but we're doing fine. We pumped the water out. Eventually, the truth will win out. And you know what I did to keep my sanity during all of this? If you can keep your head in remember, I've read "If" to you over the years. If you can keep your head when all those around you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, then you'll be a man, my son. Well, let me tell you something. These are not just words to me. I've told you I've been working on my autobiography in the form of Savage Stories for the last, I don't know, a year now. It's really more like my whole life. But, okay, so I'm trying to get it ready for the printer. So I've been working on it all summer. I just buried myself in the manuscript. And you know what I just got now, an hour ago? Dear Dr. Savage, from the transcriber typist, here is a revised, updated Word document with all the stories. 206 type pages, 61,632 words. So, in other words, I bury myself in work. When things have gotten tough in my life, I follow the advice of Rodin and my father. Rodin, the great sculptor, wrote, "Work is the only salvation." My father put it another way. "Get out of bed and go to work, you bum. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Don't live off the fat of the land." Oh, I had it all. You know, I watched the movie yesterday. Well, let me get back to this. I'll get sidetracked in a minute, and you'll really have a good time. You like it best when I get sidetracked. I have the table of contents. I'm sorry, I can read you all of them. It's unbelievable to me that I did this. I did it. You don't know what this means to me to be able to work under duress. It means that the street peddler, the genes within me that were able to come to a new country and start from the bottom in the gutter with a push cart are still alive and well, thank God. I am not one of these effete slobs who needs someone to help me. Thank God I'm still able to work even when people are casting aspersions on me that are false. So chapter one is the autism storm. I'm not going to read them all, but listen to some of the stories. The electric blue saddle-stitched pants, the fly and the tuna. Tough high school geometry teacher, two fingers on right hand, was in the IRA. Tippy the dog who would let people in, not out, and how our immigration policy should be. I'm going to skip now. End of day glass. The death of pets. Let's see. My mother would have been a good radio talk show host. Cleaning Bronzes in the Basement, Abraham and Isaac. The Medical Discovery of the Decade, Why Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. When Pasta Was Spaghetti, Louie and His Monkey, Half Man, Half Woman in Long Beach, One Arm Frank, The Chestnut Man, Woodchuck Bill, Nutty Friend Had Crazy Mother, Was a Rock Star Young, Then a Post Office Worker, Coney Island Wax Figures, let's see, Dead Man's Pants, Sam the Butcher, Fat Al's Tuna, The Bungalow Colony, Happy and Sad Cufflinks, First Autopsy. I don't want to read you anymore because people will just rob some of these titles from me. I'm such an original that my titles alone are worth stealing of my stories. And it ends with, I don't know how it ends yet. I have one story I'm going to put at the end, maybe Savage for President, where one of the callers suggested I run, and I take that call and turn it into a little short story. I know many of you want to buy it, but it's not for sale, and I'm not trying to sell you on a book right now. I shouldn't be doing this. It's considered stupid to market something long before it's available, but I'm doing it because I'm so excited by it, and I'm proud of it, to be honest with you. I'm proud that I could work despite the duress. You know, instead of quitting, instead of running away, instead of hiding, I knew that I was right. I know that I'm right. I know where my heart lies. I've always been a friend of the defenseless, particularly the children, because of issues in my life. And I'm not going to let people malign me. This book's going to set the record straight in so many ways. My guess is that most of you listening to this show are going to buy the book over the next, you know, couple of months. And it should be available, I'm guessing, November 1st, in the stores November 15th, just in time for the holidays. But I'll actually put it up on my website before then, once we have a cover, and let you take advance orders so that you can get a copy, because I don't know how many to print. I have no idea. Some are saying 100,000 you should print. Some say 25,000. I don't really know. I'll have to see. But that's besides the point. The main point is that when things get tough, you heard that. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. That's so true. Don't just sit there and take it. Fight back and work. You can work your way out of any hole. Even if it's a sand trap on a golf course, you can blow that ball out of the sand. It's the same in life.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
In the midday sun, the Japanese don't care to, the Chinese wouldn't dare to. Hindus and Argentines sleep firmly from 12 to 1, but Englishmen deter star siesta. In the Philippines, they have lovely screens to protect you from the glare. In the Malay states, there are hats like plates which the Britishers won't wear. At 12 noon, the natives swoon and no further work is done. But mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun.
Bing, welcome to the Savage Nation. One in five members of British Parliament have mental illness. It confirms that liberalism is a mental disorder. I think that number is far too low. I think the scientists are off. But I would suggest that we should bring that scientific team to America, and we might learn finally, why America is deadlocked and why we have two doofuses running for the presidency. 1-800-449-8255. As I've pointed out in the first hour, the government has confirmed what I told you on the 9th of June, 2008, which is that the contaminated tomatoes were coming from Mexico. Now, they will spend millions of dollars to continue to cover up with a whitewash, with a blue ribbon committee, another whitewash job like they did on 9/11, and not one doofus in the government will get fired, go to jail, lose his pension. And that's the name of the game. That's where we find ourselves today. If you care to comment on any of these topics, I suggest you don't, because if you do, you're only going to get more agitated than you already are. If, on the other hand, you feel that you must comment on some of these topics, I suggest you call either the golfer, the wall bank, or the bartender. And the reason I call him the bartender is because I believe he'd be much happier in Duffy's Tavern than in talk radio. Anyone who can make a career out of bashing illegal immigrants and think that that's a show belongs behind the bar in a white apron at Duffy's Tavern. Come out. Welcome to the Savage Nation on KNEW. What's on your mind?
Yes, thanks for taking my call, Dr. Savage. I just want to say, man, I remember very well last month on June 9th, you were indeed the first person to mention the contaminated tomatoes. And yet, it's just amazing how you don't get no credit for it. It's just amazing to me because everything you said then was 100% right on.
Yes, but if the government were to acknowledge that I was 6 weeks, 2 months ahead of them, they would acknowledge that they're worthless and we don't need the bureaucrats. If one intelligent man can figure this out without a blue ribbon commission and without a boondoggle trip somewhere to and an investigation, a discussion, and a laboratory, and spending millions of dollars, a man could do it with common sense. What do they need a governmental agency for?
Exactly. And the thing
exactly. Now you know why they don't want to acknowledge anybody who has can figure it out. But I'm glad the listeners listen. They get something out of the show. That's Portland, Oregon. Rick, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Appreciate taking the call, Dr. Savage. You were just talking about the employers using illegal aliens as slave labor, and it's such a blatant reminder why we need you on the radio. The press here in Oregon, TV and newspapers, issued a report from a local professor. The employer groups in Oregon, agriculture, restaurant, construction, pay this professor $30,000 to then tell us all that 150,000 people will be out of work and $300 million in lost revenue if they can't hire illegal aliens. And what the press left out is he said in his report he didn't include the social service costs.
Mm-hmm. No, they never do. Now, these poor folks are being exploited. And, of course, they're sending their excess wages home. If they're so exploited, how come they can send $15 billion a year in excess wages to Mexico? Why do you suppose they have excess wages? A, they're not paying taxes. B, they get free medical care. C, they get free services in many other ways. And they send their money home to their home country. But we're paying the invisible costs, Rick.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, look, let's be clear. Most of these jobs are very hard jobs. I've worked in a factory. I know how hard factory work is, unlike most people who simply bash illegal immigrants because they think it's a good way to get ratings. It's a terrible job, and very few people would want the job, Rick. But there are millions of Americans who could be forced to take those jobs once the illegals were encouraged to go home. There are millions of Americans who are able-bodied, receiving welfare, who could work if we stopped giving them welfare and said, you're going to go to work in a factory, you're going to have to work. I don't care how many doctors or lawyers you bring at us. We're cutting you off. You're going to work in that factory. You're going to work in that slaughterhouse. You're going to pick the fruits and vegetables. I've said this 1,000 times, Rick. Who do you think picked the vegetables in the Central Valley of California after the Dust Bowl in Oklahoma? It was poor white people. They were not illegal aliens. They were displaced Americans whose homes got swept away by tornadoes. They came out. Remember the great novel, The Grapes of Wrath by Steinbeck? Many of you read that in high school. I don't think it's required reading anymore because today they have new books such as Barry Has Two Daddies. Far more important is literature. That follows the great bestseller, Bobby Has Two Mommies. But The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck told the story of migrant families from Oklahoma who were wiped out during the Great Depression, right after the Great Depression, when a series of tornadoes swept through the farmlands, mainly in Oklahoma and northern Texas, and made the people leave their homes, their ranches, their farms, and come west to pick cherries in the orchards of California. And it was about the families, the sharecroppers in essence, if they were even sharecroppers. I think they were just lower than sharecroppers. They were all white families. What I'm saying is there are still millions of people who could be encouraged to pick the vegetables right here in this country we would solve two problems at once. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. Wheeling, Virginia, West Virginia. Dan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
God bless you, Michael. Hey, John McCain is visiting San Francisco, kissing up to Nancy Pelosi. My theory is that they're just pulling back the curtain and letting us see it's all a big scam. What do you have to say about it?
Well, I've said it all for these years when I've said it's a Democrat or Republican-controlled Congress. I think McCain is a bad example of that, actually a very good example of the too cozy relationship between the opposing parties. And I've made another statement that when two parties are getting along, ultimately it's the American taxpayer who's getting screwed. Two parties are supposed to have opposite opinions and opposite positions, rather, on most social policies. And there's supposed to be a vigorous national debate about which side the country wants to go, whether toward the socialist side or the free market side. And when you see the two sides coming together, it's very bad for the American taxpayer. That's what I think, Dan. Thank you for the call. Now, we can move on to other topics, I guess. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. If there's any other topic you would like to discuss, please feel free to call me at the Savage Nation. We have some interesting sound here. I guess the most interesting thing is McCain's new ad attacking Obama's celebrity status and lack of substance, which I happen to agree with. And I think that Obama threw the racial card out. And I've expected this for a long time. I thought that when things got bad for him, he would go to form and go back to the affirmative action that got him as far as he's gotten. And make no mistake about it, you could be as offended as you want at what I just said, but I'd like you to prove to me, using it again, he does the phony European tour, the German communists applaud him after a rock concert, he comes back, he got no bump in the polls, so the first thing his handlers do is come up with a dollar bill and says he doesn't look like all the others on our currency. So what's that supposed to mean? I'm supposed to be guilty and automatically turn my country and the keys to my future over to this unknown? I'm not going to take the bait. He started it. He's the one who threw out the race card. Listen to McCain.
He's the biggest celebrity in the world. But is he ready to lead? With gas prices soaring, Barack Obama says no to offshore drilling and says he'll raise taxes on electricity. Higher taxes, more foreign oil. That's the real Obama.
I'm John McCain, and I approve this message.
Okay, well, that killed it. If only he didn't say a word, it would have been better. I mean, the punchline killed the entire joke. But McCain's campaign today accused Barack Obama of playing the race card after the candidate claimed Republicans will try to scare voters by saying he quite doesn't look like all those other presidents on the dollar bills. But he said it, not them. I mean, what do you think was stupid? Now, until now, the explosive issue of race has been almost taboo in the campaign, with both sides fearing its destructive force. But I agree with the McCain campaign manager, Rick Davis, who I think is otherwise a moron, when he says Barack Obama has played the race card, and he played it from the bottom of the deck. It's divisive, negative, shameful, and wrong. I agree with him 100%. It was Obama who threw out the race card because he's desperate. He's slipping in the polls. And McCain is moving ahead. And as you well know, Reverend Wright is going to come back to haunt Obama again in October. Obama's former pastor, Jeremiah Wright, as you well know, came under fire for sermons in which he accused the government of conspiring against blacks, causing AIDS, and being basically an evil government and this being an evil country. Now, that disclosure of Reverend Jeremiah Wright exposed Obama for who he probably really is on the inside. And that threatened damage to Obama's campaign. But with the help from little men like Wolf Blitzer in the media, department store dummies without any secondary sexual characteristics, so far as I can tell, they have swept that under the rug. However, I believe that Obama is now in very deep trouble, and we're only starting to see what's coming. And I believe that the Reverend Wright issue will come back to haunt him sometime in September when I and everybody else in talk radio start to play Reverend Wright again. And should I play Reverend Wright's speech again? I don't care what you say because I'm going to play it anyway. And I'll tell you why. Because if McCain had gone to a church for 20 years who had had a Ku Klux Klan member as a pastor, who got up there and said horrendous things about other races, and he sat through them for 20 years. And if McCain had gone to a church where a pastor married him and this pastor had said vile things about America, do you think that the department store dummies in the media would not be playing those today? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Proud to be an Okie from Muskogee. A place where even squares can have a ball.
Yeehaw.
We still wave old glory down at the courthouse. And white lightning still the biggest thrill of all. Leather boots are still in style.
They're not bug chasers, in other words, in San Francisco. They don't need therapy down in the Okie region. They don't need to go to some whack job to tell them why they don't feel good. All right, turn it off already. Now, the Okies, as I said, came out of the Dust Bowl in the dirty 30s, which was a period of severe dust storms causing major ecological damage to American and Canadian prairie lands from 1930 to 36. And they went west, and they, the Okies, who we are talking about, after their farmlands were destroyed, they went, thousands of families, hundreds of thousands of families from the Dust Bowl, often known as Okies, since so many came from Oklahoma, traveled to California, where they found conditions really little better than those they had left behind. They owned no land. They traveled from farm to farm picking fruit and other crops at starvation wages. And Steinbeck later wrote the classic The Grapes of Wrath and also of Mice and Men about such people. And what I'm getting at is we have millions of Americans who are nice and taken care of, who are able-bodied, who could be doing this work today. And because we have become a semi-socialist government state, which we're taxed to death, where the government won't cut back on any of the programs or services that they offer, city, state, local, federal, they keep raising taxes and increasing the rolls. Consequently, we have millions of people who are able-bodied who could be doing this work. And if we employed the American by taking them off welfare, off government programs, and forcing them to pick the cherries, pick the tomatoes, if there are any tomato farms left, pick the crops, they would displace the illegals who would go home to their home country. And that's a big problem that could be solved that way. But look, I don't want to go into the illegal alien story right now. It's an easy topic. It's something that only the bartender could do on a repetitive basis and think it's original. I guess he's proud of his new dentures. You know, look, it cost him a lot of money, and from where he came from to have nice teeth like that is a real step up. And so if I also should be wearing a white apron instead of be doing this, and suddenly you have a microphone and you figure how do you get ahead as a bartender who's been given a microphone, what you do is you copy Michael Savage. And if you have the capacity to do so, you learn, let's say, one out of 15 steps. And right now he's taking a baby step, the bartender, and he's doing illegal immigration on a daily basis. But frankly, all he needs is a white apron behind Duffy's Tavern. He'd be much happier. He's got a nice pair of teeth on him. 1-800, I saw a good movie last night on TV, and I took the day off working on the book and to really to relax and the pressure I've been under. Didn't go on the boat, didn't go anywhere. And I watched the movie, or like I was felt like a kid again, like the early, what was that show? The early show. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Mom would come in. Dinner on a tray at 5 o'clock. Dad was still toiling, oh, before the heart attack. And here I am, man-child in the promised land, being fattened up by Mom, who was catering to me. The steak, the French fries, the vanilla ice cream. Da-da-da-da-da. I'd watch too many movies till my head was spinning. Dad would come in 6, 6:30. I was already keeled over on the couch from a big meal with the pants opened up. He turned white like a ghost. Poor guy. He would turn white like a ghost from the commute back from Manhattan. He'd see his son, the man-child in the promised land, stuffed like a goose on the couch already. I already ate. He was starving to death, starving, white in the face. And, of course, I was being spoiled by the mother. And that's when he grabbed – that was it. That was the last straw. He took me the next – he said, that's it. You're finished. no more weekends off. You're going to go to work for me. And he threw me down into the Dickensian basement to clean the bronzes down there. It's in my autobiography coming out in November. Terrible, terrible things. God bless them both.
Savage.
To Duffy's Tavern.
We're living with the issue of race. We've got to be able to talk about it. And I can guarantee you this, not a single...
Right. The bartender enters the talk radio world. We have the golfer, the bartender from Duffy's Tavern. All he needs is the white apron. Shares of Biogen, IDEC Inc., and Elan Corp. plunged after hours tonight after the companies reported two new cases of a brain disease in patients treated with their MS drug, Tysabri. Oh, my God. So shares of two drug companies plunged tonight after two new cases of a brain disease were found in patients treated with their MS drug, Tysabri. Gee, that's terrible. This is the same condition that led to the drug being pulled off the market for a time 3 years ago. But given that we have the government that we have, given that we have the corrupt FDA that we have, they were able to buy their way back onto the marketplace. Now, of course, the FDA chief who permitted this drug to go back in the market should be sent to prison for 50 years and all of his assets seized onto the third generation. But you'll never find out who in the FDA said, well, even though this drug caused this type of disease 3 years ago, and we knew about it, and I let it back on because I'm a corrupt SOB who belongs in a sewer somewhere, you'll never find out his name. Instead, he'll be promoted somewhere inside the U.S. government. And that's the government that we have today in so many cases. Now, there are, you know, a few people here and there who really do great jobs. Congressman Spence is trying to block the fairness doctrine, but he's been blocked by Mussolini, Pelosi. So that's not a good thing. What other stories are out there? Here's another one for you global warming fanatics. Those of you who are brainwashed into thinking the sky is falling and the world is coming to an end. Daily new evidence emerges to demonstrate that climate minister Penny Wong is wrong. This is out of Australia. The latest blow to the government's apocalyptic prophet is news from the Norwegian Meteorological Institute that there is more ice than normal in the Arctic waters north of the Svalbard archipelago. According to the Barents Observer, there are open areas in this area in most years during July, but this year the area is covered by ice. 2 weeks ago, a Norwegian research ship, Lance, and a Swedish ship, motor vessel Stockholm, got stuck in the ice in the area and needed to be freed by the Norwegian Coast Guard. While one ice floe does not amount to a mini ice age, the dramatic evidence runs counter to the mantra of the climate warming cult, which has claimed the Arctic is becoming progressively free of ice. Once again, real-time events and science are defeating Al Gorleone of the criminal Gorleone Empire. Now try to tell this to the attorney generals of the states of California and elsewhere, these pigeon brains. Try to show them the evidence. Say, but sir, there's more Arctic ice than in the past. But sir, ships had to be freed in the Arctic. But sir, the ice pack in the Antarctic is thicker than ever in recorded history. You will find that what you say to them, no matter what evidence you present, will fall on deaf ears. You will find that the steroid-ridden movie star Arnold Schwarzenegger is so wed to the global warming fantasy and the cult of the global warming fantasy that he would not even look at this evidence. You will find that the entire government is sold on this fiction. They are all members of the global warming cult started by Al Gorleone, who eventually proved to them that there's money in it. And as Willie Sutton, the bank robber of the 1950s, said when asked, why do you rob banks? He answered, because that's where the money is. When asked truthfully in the quiet hours of the morning of the bureaucrats, why do you push this theory when evidence keeps mounting that you are wrong? The answer would be the same, because that's where the money is. 1-800-449-8255, phone number, michaelsavage.com, website. Waco, Texas City, Juan. Juan, you're up on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, Michael Savage,
Dude, you are awesome. I'm a 28-year-old Hispanic. I work for a metal shop. I recently got a friend, a coworker friend, he loves your show as well. I heard a couple of weeks back you were talking about not doing your talk show no more. You cannot do that. You have to keep going. I mean, you're the reason why I don't listen to Limbaugh and Hannity anymore. I love your show. There's only two things I disagree on you with, but, you know, that's... Well. Neither
that's America. That's I'm sure we disagree on more than two things, but that's the nature of a good democracy, is having somebody you can disagree with. When you wake up and you hear voices that are saying what you believe to be false and you can't disagree with them, and there's nobody representing your position, you'll be living in a dictatorship.
Well, I just gotta say, do not quit the show.
Hey, thanks, man. It means a lot to me. People don't realize that radio is dying in some aspects and thriving in others. Music in radio is dead for obvious reasons, because kids can download it for nothing. Sports, okay, big deal. You can get that anywhere. The only reason the one element that's going to keep talk radio alive is talk radio. We are the only original content on terrestrial radio right now. The rest is kind of pretty dull. And I think people are clamoring for original voices. And luckily, you know, here I am. Oh, so I was telling you last night I didn't get around to it. I watched TV. I closed all of the windows and closed the curtains. It was early. It was like I started to tell you, like I was a kid. I wanted to just escape, tune out, veg out. And I said, you know what? So what? What am I committing a crime here? You know what I'm saying? I mean, who am I hurting by watching TV at 5 o'clock? It's my day off. I can do what I want. So I click around, and I lucked out with a movie from 1984, The Pope of Greenwich Village, starring Julia Roberts' brother, Eric Roberts, who plays like a wacky, punky kid from Greenwich Village, like Little Italy, along with Mickey Rourke in one of his early roles. They're like two punks who are waiters who get fired because they were robbing the owner of the restaurant. And they try to pull off a scam, a safe-cracking scam. But they don't well, the Eric Roberts character doesn't tell the Mickey Rourke character that the safe they're about to break into was owned by one of the guys who belongs to a social club on Mulberry Street. And the safe has the money in it for a pickup by a corrupt detective. I had never seen the movie. I thought I had seen it, but I really never saw it. It was unbelievably well done. I enjoyed this movie so much for so many different reasons. And then the one thing I came away from that movie with was I came away with a lot of things from it. Well, let me tell you in a minute. I want to go on and on about this movie for a few minutes, because a good movie will make you think and make you reflect on your life or whatever. So I'm thinking back on it. I said, you know, those are like the streets I left behind in New York, the mean streets of New York. I was glad to get out of New York when I left in the late 60s. I didn't like New York. I hated it. I felt oppressed by it. And, of course, it was a different time. I mean, I can't speak in general terms for today, nor do I think I could live in New York City today. I don't like crowds at all. I don't like noise. I don't like pushing. I don't like shoving. I don't like pollution. I'm not that kind of person. I prefer to go into San Francisco when I want, on my terms, off hours, and do the Green Hornet job, meaning like – when I want to be where I want to be, I don't want to be pushed in there. Anyways, that's me, one guy. But I got the feeling of how incredibly claustrophobic New York is from that movie. That was number one. Then number two, I remembered how hard it was to start from the bottom when you have nothing. That's what these two bums in the movie were portrayed as, two kids with nothing. They figured they're going to get their step up. They're going to rob this this safe. And they're going to get started in life with the money. And, of course, it all goes wrong. I don't have to tell you why. But the characterizations, the players in this movie, like there was one woman who plays the mother of the detective. She plays an old alcoholic Irish woman who was a housekeeper all of her life for the rich up on Park Avenue. I don't know who this actress was. But at the end of the movie, when other detectives from Internal Affairs come around to her after her corrupt son was found dead, they ask her some questions, and they threaten her that they're going to tumble the house to look for the tapes he may have had, which incriminate them. And she looks at them through like a whiskey glass, and she says to him in the armchair, she says, "Let me tell you something. My son was as tough as a steel rod, and he didn't get it from his father."
And she says, if you push me around and you tumble this house, my brother is a parish priest, and we'd look real good on the nightly news, telling everyone how you detectives, blah, blah. It was so good. This woman should have won. If anyone knows who that woman was playing that part, I want to know. That was one great scene. Then Eric who? Geraldine Page. I heard the name. I don't recognize, but she was so good. Now, the Eric Roberts character in The Pope of Greenwich Village, why am I going on about a 1984 movie when there's so many more important topics? Only because I enjoyed it. And I figure it's time for a little break at this point. So I'll tell you what else I enjoyed about it, if you don't mind. And if you do mind, I'll tell you anyway, because I have a desire to tell you a little bit more. The character portrayed by Eric Roberts, the wacky kid from the Lower East Side, from Greenwich Village, who's like, you know, a weak, lovable dummy, and Mickey Rourke's the tough guy, blah, 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 is an interesting character, and I thought it was extremely well done. I've never been a fan of Eric Roberts. He always left me cold. But he actually was quite good in this. I think he was actually playing himself. And when I saw this role, I actually think that's the inner Eric Roberts, which is why I never bought him as a tough guy in any of the subsequent movies. That's number two. Now the chick, the girlfriend of Mickey Rourke, is played by that tall blonde chick. What's her name? Who's like Daryl Hannah, who was, you know, gorgeous in those days. I think it was one of her first roles. She was, you know, that was the 80s, right? When the women were wearing leg warmers, and there was a lot of movies showing them in aerobic studios, and every shot was like a rear end, blah, 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 and the guys would sit in the movie theater almost dying. So they had the aerobics studio. They had the girls in the leg warmers. It brings you back to the 80s. But she was very believable in it. The wasp from Maine who falls in love with the half Irish, half Italian guy from Little Italy who's tough to her and blah, 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 and all of that stuff. Very believable in that and very lovely. So those are some of the elements that stuck out. Now, wait, I'm getting to the dessert of it. The guy who plays the wise guy who they rob, and I love him. He was in so many. What's his name? The little guy with the bug eyes. They call him. They call him the bug or bug eye or buggy, something like that. The guy. Does anyone know? I'm groping here. Does anyone help me out on this, babe? Look it up on IMDb. This guy plays the guy who they rob, and he does such a superb job at it. I've seen him in every role. Now, his best role ever was the guy in The Sopranos, where he plays the father of the fat guy who takes care of the soprano uncle in New Jersey. And when he comes, he's retired in Florida, and they call him back in The Sopranos to knock off Mustang Sal, who had beat a kid almost to death with a golf club. And he's got emphysema, and he's almost dead, and they figure that he'll get in there because the kid trusts him. And that scene in The Sopranos of him in the death fight, with this kid was, I mean, one of the great TV violence scenes. You know, I got to tell you, I love great performances, and this was a great performance. So he plays this part in this 1984 movie that is so wonderful. I don't know his name. It doesn't really matter, truthfully. They just sent it to me by email. Till I download it already, I could have a conniption here on the show. Where are we here? I'm downloading here. Director Stuart Rosen. The Pope of Greenwich. Vincent Patrick novel. Vincent Patrick screenplay. June 1984. Charlie and his troublesome cousin Paulie decide to steal $150,000 in order to back a sure thing racehorse that Paulie has inside information on. The aftermath of the robbery gets them into serious trouble. Blah, blah. Eric Roberts, Mickey Rourke, Daryl Hannah, Geraldine Page, Kenneth McMillan, Burt Young, Bedbug Eddy, Burt Young. Unbelievably well done. One of the funniest scenes in the movie is Burt Young, the wise guy, is sitting and eating a huge plate of pasta with red sauce all over it. You know, he's got the napkin on the neck. Like I eat, I mean, it's intelligent to eat that way. You don't have to be a wise guy or a dumb guy to eat with a napkin on your neck. You got to be an idiot not to, because you're going to splatter yourself. And who you're showing? So he's eating the pasta as they used to show the guys would eat in those days in those scenes. And the corrupt detective comes to talk to him about the payoff. So the detective says to him, he says, "What? No scungili today?" And Bedbug Eddy says to him, "Nah, I got a sour stomach." He says, "I got to eat bland." And the guy's knocking off a huge plate of red sauce, spaghetti, and some other seafood. But that's his idea of eating bland. I mean, it was a joke. It had to be a joke that the writer-director wrote into it that very few people must have gotten. I'm eating bland. I mean, for this guy, that was eating bland, right?
That was a funny scene, but forget it. I'm talking to myself here. Then in another funny scene, somebody insults Jimmy the Cheese Man and says to him, "Ah, your family made rotten cheese. It was rough cheese, tough cheese." And he says, "This family never made bad cheese. Our cheese was never hard. You lie." You know, there's some very good jokes in this movie, but you got to be into the jokes to really enjoy them. Anyway, I enjoyed myself tremendously. There is no punchline to this story other than I enjoyed it. I had no idea it was so good. Yes, there is one more part to it. At the end of the movie, A, I was glad I left New York when I did because I don't think I would have survived. That was A. I never could have gotten where I am today if I had stayed in New York. I had to get out of there. I had to start anew. In those days, it was go west, young man, go west. Today, I don't know if it's go west, young man, go west. It's something else. But there was something else. Mickey Rourke was in his heyday in the 80s, in the 90s, and now he's like petered out, and now he's like buffed himself up with steroids, and he plays like really bad, tough guys. But I think he's lost the charm he had as a younger guy as an actor. He continues to keep playing the tough guy to the point of no return. I'm sure he is a tough guy. That's not my point. But it's not a matter of whether you're a real tough guy playing a tough guy in the movies. The question is, are you entertaining enough to entertain the audience? And I believe he's so hard and so tough in real life because of desperation, by the way, that he actually is unenjoyable to look at. And I don't enjoy Mickey Rourke anymore. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of guys, there's another point to the point, if you don't mind. There's another point to the point. A lot of guys had it young in life. They made it really big young, 30s, 40s, top of the world. Now they're late 50s, 60s, and they're bombed out. They're on the end of the trajectory of their career. Now, which way would you rather have it? Young or old? Young or older? Me? I had no choice. I'm glad it came to me toward the side of the hourglass that I'm in. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Waiting tables is what you know. Making cheese is what I know. Let's stay with what we know here.
You know about making cheese. Not for nothing, Jimmy, but my mother sent me over a hunk of mozzarella from your place last week. It was no big bargain. Tough, that mozzarella. And it ain't the first time I noticed it either. Your mozzarella is tough sometimes.
Are you nuts? The Gargusso's never sold a piece of tough mozzarella in our life.
Babel found that on YouTube, that exact scene I'm talking about. What are you, nuts? The Gargusso's never sold a tough piece of mozzarella in our lives. There's such good stuff in this movie. I guess you have to be from that menu to understand how funny it is. I don't know that it would translate anymore today. The accents were perfect, too, I got to tell you. Everything dies down in time. Even the accents start to get muted. But that's neither here nor there. Here we are living in this man-made fantasy about global warming, the man-made fantasy about how evil America is, the man-made fantasies that were all inherited from these doofus politicians. Unbelievable to me. Here's a nice email from a friend of mine in the radio business. He said, "Michael, I heard you yesterday telling a story about your mom putting cod liver oil in your OJ. See, you're a success because your mom loved you." He says, "My mom made me take my cod liver oil straight. Yuck, best." And, of course, thank you, sir. Yes, she did put it in orange juice because I was not tough enough to take it straight. I hate cod liver oil. I can't stand it. I try to take it now. I don't know. I can't stand the fish liver oils. I get sick from it. I can't eat any. I mean, I'm Mr. Health Food. I can't take that stuff. Yesterday, I went back on niacin for the first time in 20 years. I can't deal with it. The flushing, it's almost better to have a heart attack. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't want God to hear it. Who wants to live like that, like somebody put an electrical wire underneath my skin all night long and itching under the private region? Your whole body, all of this for reducing the cholesterol levels. All right, I've been taking vitamins all of my life, 30 years, and it pays off. It's mainly for me, the vitamin C and the vitamin E. I happen to know that. I look 20 years younger than I am. I act 40 years younger than I am. I think 50 years younger than I am. And I'll be back in a few minutes to be exactly who I am, right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage. Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Tables is what you know. Making cheese is what I know. Let's stay with what we know here.
You know about making cheese. Not for nothing, Jimmy, but my mother sent me over a hunk of mozzarella from your place last week. It was no big bargain. Tough, that mozzarella. And it ain't the first time I noticed it either. Your mozzarella is tough sometimes.
Are you nuts? The Gargusso's never sold a piece of tough mozzarella in our life.
Hey, Paulie, give me some more wine. It is the Savage Nation. We're talking about Bed Bugatti, Paulie, Charlie, Diane, Mrs. Ritter, Bonnie, Pete Burns, Paulie's father, and Nunzi in a movie I saw on a TV yesterday called The Pope of Greenwich Village. I mean, I'm just, you know, relaxing a little bit from the horrible climate that we're living in here of the two-dimensional men and women that are running our country. It was refreshing, actually, going back to this portrayal of petty gangsters. They looked better to me than the politicians do today. At least they were nakedly what they were, looking to, you know, score and scam instead of pretending they're trying to do something else. Anyway, it's one man's opinion. Whatever. Whatever. So today, Daryl Hannah, where is she? Gone. Nothing. But, you know, at least she had the smarts and the dignity. Once, well, it's a family show, and I don't want to sound misogynistic. It's enough trouble I'm in already, mistakenly, you know. But I noticed something, which is that the, how can I put it in a more delicate manner? I can't. There's only some one way to put it. Well, I'll go to another one, Goldie Hawn. When Goldie Hawn first appeared in the movies, I'm talking the 60s, people gasped. It was always a posterior shot. And the movie went silent. I mean, when she walked in restaurants, people stopped eating. She was forget it. And then once time and gravity caught up with her, as it does with all of us, man or woman, but unfortunately, the women get hit worse with it younger. There's no question about it. It's just nature. It's some kind of curse. That's why with Viagra today and hair transplants, a lot of guys, you know, act like morons till they're 80. I never saw anything like it. Oh, another one, another toupee. But so once the derriere starts to move downward, the politics start to move leftward, has been my observation. Goldie Hawn, and she got laughed off the stage, I mean, by myself and others like 5 years ago. This woman was getting crazier by the day. This woman was on an ice floe going left that didn't stop. They had to pull her out. But you never see her anymore. Now, Daryl Hannah, to her credit, never became political, so far as I know, and disappeared. I don't know where she is. I mean, you know, she was beautiful in her day, did great movies that captivated men and gone. Eric Roberts, as I said, never really blah, blah, blah. Mickey Rourke is still doing TV movies, but he's a genuinely tough guy. There's no question about it. But he's gotten too buff, too big, too mean, too tough. Now, that goes into a guy like De Niro. No one could argue that De Niro never played a tough guy well because he did it better than as good as anybody. I rewatched the boxing one. What was that one? Raging Bull last week. Again, I was awed by how good it was. You know, the role he played, it had me laughing because it reminded me a lot of the kind of, I don't mean my father was a boxer, but the undershirts in the houses and the undershorts and the dialogue was identical to my background, where the father was the king and the boss, and the mother hovered with fear serving the food, almost like in an Iroquois painting, like if the woman served wrongly, she'd be put in a well. You know, and the kid sits there frightened to say a word because he's next to go, what are you, you know, like a whack it across the head. It was a different world, but I was watching that movie, Raging Bull. I was enjoying the whole Pelham Parkway when he beats up the brother, played by Joe Pesci. Now, to top this one off, I lucked out with The Pope of Greenwich Village. And the sad part is that when the movie's over and you pull the curtain, it's still day out. You don't know what to do with yourself. I was like a kid again. You know what I mean? Remember when you were a kid, you went to the movies on Saturday? You would suspend all reality for those 2 hours. It was dark and you're in another world. And you'd come out into the light. You were dazed. You didn't know where you were. Oh, my God, this is reality. What am I going to do with the rest of the day? I mean, there was no Ritalin then. There was no Prozac for kids in those days. There was no diagnosis saying you were crazy because you went to a movie during the day and you didn't go instead to exercise or to math camp or something or whatever. And so you had to deal with the rest of the day. Anyway, you could sniff glue, whatever. So I never did glue. I had friends who did. You know where they are today? They're all in politics. Nobody I know went into politics. But Burt Young as Bedbug Eddie, you got to admit, was great in that movie. Now, why am I talking about this movie? Two reasons. A, I don't want to talk about John McCain and Barack Hussein Obama anymore. That's number one. B, because it was fun and I can do it and it's my talk show where I get to talk about anything I want. And C, I happen to think it's entertaining. But before I conclude my observations about this movie, which are trivial, I admit, because I'm not a movie critic, I'd like to again go back to Robert De Niro. De Niro, as I started to say, played tough guys like in Raging Bull and in so many other roles, as good as any, as good as the best of them. Now, what did he do when he got older? He didn't continue to play a tough guy. He went into the romantic comedy role, and he actually made the transition, of course. Do I have to tell you how well he's done it? The movies with Ben Stiller are a scream. You know, like analyze this, analyze that, meet the Fokers. Phenomenal roles, and only he could do it, and he made the transition because he's a versatile actor. While Mickey Rourke, a genuinely tough guy who played tough guys, has not made that transition because he can't, because it's not in him. Do you understand that? It's the same in talk radio in many ways. I mean, I can't make the transition to a middle-of-the-roader as so many have done in talk radio. There is a direct point that I'm trying to make. Many in talk radio have seen which way the wind blows, and they've altered their politics in order to continue to become saleable, con, and the bartender. But I can't make that transition because I see the world in my way, and I'm not going to see it in your way. And I'm not going to see it in the way the government wants me to see it. I did it my way, in other words. And if this keeps up, I'll have a drink and I'll sing my way. So thank God this is not going to keep up because I'm going to go to break in a minute. And I'm going to play for you an interview I did earlier today with the Timmerman today about the Iranians who want to set off a bomb in the air and give an EMP knockout punch to the schmucks here in this country who don't know the danger they're in. If that's not good enough for you, well, tomorrow you got the golfer, the wall banger, the leprechaun, and the bartender to keep hammering you with how bad the Democrats are and how good the Republicans are. But until then, I'll be back.
Savage.
I've tried to warn America about the threat of this maniac in Iran and the mad throwback mullahs over and over again. With their potential to get nuclear weapons getting closer every day, isn't it time we woke up, took notice of what the Iranians are about to do? Ken Timmerman has been on the show many times and joins us today to warn us what is going on now. Ken Timmerman, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on again. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, give us an update. What is going on over there?
Well, Michael, I was at a missile defense conference last weekend that was sponsored by the Claremont Institute in California. We were in Dearborn, Michigan, and one of the experts who was there was Dr. William Graham, who was the science advisor under President Ronald Reagan. And since 2001, he's been the chairman of this Blue Ribbon National Security Commission. It's called the Commission to Assess the Threat to the United States from Electromagnetic Pulse. Now, an EMP attack is something that we've known about since 1962. In fact, Dr. Graham was one of the people who actually discovered this.
What is an EMP and what would it do?
It's the enormous discharge set off by a nuclear explosion up in the atmosphere. Now, all during the Cold War, the United States military protected our systems against EMP attacks from the Soviet Union. They figured that if we had a nuclear exchange with the Soviet Union, we would also have this EMP strike, which would cripple all of our electronics. What EMP does is essentially it will melt transistors and silicon-based computer chips. So we spent billions and billions of dollars during the Cold War to harden our systems. Since the end of the Cold War, we haven't done anything. And new weapons going into service no longer have EMP hardening. Here is where it gets very dicey and very interesting. That Dr. Graham revealed this past weekend that the Iranian regime has conducted a series of missile tests recently indicative of development of an EMP weapon. And Dr. Graham and his commission, this commission on the EMP threat to the United States, asked the Central Intelligence Agency to translate a number of articles in Iranian military journals where, in fact, they talk about an EMP attack on the United States, and they identify that as being our great vulnerability.
Well, what are we doing about this?
Well, as of right now, Michael, we aren't doing anything. We have Dr. Graham, again, he testified recently in Congress on July 10th. It was a hearing that was asked to be called by Representative Roscoe Bartlett, who's a friend of mine here in Maryland, the state where I reside, and he's been on to this for a number of years. But he's a scientist as well as a member of the House. EMP is not very widely known, electromagnetic pulse. People are not that aware of the threat. There have been a number of liberal websites and liberal scientists who claim that it's not a serious threat. But the Blue Ribbon Commission that Dr. Graham chairs has come to really devastating conclusions. They believe that in the event of an EMP attack, which could be set off by even a crude nuclear weapon detonated in our atmosphere, which the Iranians could do by launching a missile from a freighter sailing off the coasts of America. They don't have to have an ICBM to do this. They can do this from a freighter. An EMP attack on our nation would essentially take us back to the era of the early 1800s. It would destroy our entire civilian infrastructure.
How come we're so unprotected from this kind of attack?
We stopped protecting against the possibility of an EMP attack during the Clinton administration. It was part of the peace dividend, so to speak, with the end of the Cold War. And you know, the Clinton folks realized that there was little likelihood of a nuclear war with the Soviet Union, and they didn't see any other threats on the horizon. And so they said, look, we don't need to spend all this money. Let's take it to the bank as part of the peace dividend. And they did. And since 2001, when George Bush has been president, he has not, to my knowledge, asked for that kind of funding and that kind of protection again. Now, there are things that we can do, and the EMP Commission has pointed this out to Congress. There are things that we can do to harden our telecommunications, our electronics infrastructure, especially the power generation, power transmission infrastructure. There are things that don't necessarily cost all that much money, but Congress has to get involved. It's a question of national infrastructure. There are things that we have to do to protect power transmission, and without that, America will simply go dark in the event of an EMP attack.
Well, what kind of attack are we talking about? How many missiles would it take to cripple our entire infrastructure here in America?
Well, here's the thing, Michael, and this is what's probably most frightening of all, is that the Iranians could essentially bring down the overwhelming majority of our national critical infrastructure, electricity, telecommunications, GPS, our automobiles, the food supplies system, water delivery systems, you name it. They could do that with a single crude nuclear weapon exploded at an altitude of between 40 kilometers and 400 kilometers above the Earth's surface. In other words, you know, up in the atmosphere. And they could do this using a Scud missile placed on a anonymous freighter sailing off the coasts of America, off the east coast or the west coast of America in the commercial shipping lanes.
Oh, my God.
We would never see the missile coming. We would not be able to prevent it at this point because we do not have the missile defenses necessary in place to be able to take down that kind of attack. And within a matter of minutes, that missile would reach apogee over, let's say, Nebraska, and it would reach 1,000 miles in either direction.
Oh, my God.
Virtually from coast to coast, taking down power plants and everything else with them.
With how devastating this attack could be, why are we sitting here and waiting?
Well, first of all, the first most important thing to do in the beginning is to get to awareness, to raise awareness of this threat. And that's what Dr. Graham has been trying to do. He's done it in his congressional testimony on July 10th. He did it by coming to this missile defense conference sponsored by the Claremont Institute just last weekend. And I've tried to do it at Newsmax.com in writing about this. People are not aware of this. They are not aware that the Iranian regime has conducted missile tests that are conducive and that indicate that they have the intention of launching an EMP attack on the United States. They have demonstrated the capability of doing so. The two sets of tests that they conducted were, first of all, they've been launching Scud missiles off of freighters and barges in the Caspian Sea, so that we know that they can do a sea-launched missile. And the second set of tests involves using their Shahab missiles and exploding the warhead up at apogee, way up in the atmosphere, and calling the missile test a success. They've got ranges that are capable of testing the full range of those missiles in Iran itself. But instead, they've conducted tests in the Caspian Sea to show that they can do sea launch, and they've exploded the warhead high up in the atmosphere, which is exactly what you would do in an EMP attack. So the threat itself has not been well known until now, so the very first step is to raise awareness of this threat.
Well, what can we the people do about this with Pelosi pointing her fingers at the Republicans and the Republicans pointing their finger at Pelosi?
Well, the first thing is to call up your representatives and even the senators in the West Coast state. You are on the coast of the United States. These are vulnerable areas. And wake them up to the EMP threat. There are things that America can do to protect ourselves. Some are very costly. They involve a space-based national missile defense system, which is something that we know how to do, but it's not yet being deployed. And other things which are less costly, which have to do with protecting and hardening our national infrastructure, starting with the power transmission and power generation facilities. But you need to get Congress involved. This is a national issue. It's not a state issue. It is a national issue. It's our national infrastructure that needs to be protected.
Savage.
You heard me coin the phrase Islamofascist. Now, it's important to understand just how historically accurate that description is. Rabbi David Gildalen is a conservative rabbi and author. His new book that he co-authored is entitled Icon of Evil, and it links the fascism of the last century with the Islamofascist terrorism of this century. Rabbi David Dallin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I'm delighted to be on your show. Thank you so much for inviting me today.
Tell us about your book.
Well, this is a book about Haj Amin al-Husseini, the Mufti of Jerusalem, who spent the war years, World War II, as part of Hitler's inner circle in Nazi Germany. The roots of Islamofascism and of radical Islam as we know it today go back to the Mufti, Haj Amin al-Husseini. We argue in this book unequivocally that he was the founding father of radical Islamic anti-Semitism and terrorism as we know it today.
Well, what did Hitler love about the Mufti?
Well, this is amazing. The Mufti he first came to the attention of Hitler in the 20s and 30s. The Mufti established his anti-Semitic credentials, which brought him to Hitler's attention by instigating and leading the murderous Arab uprisings against the Jews of Jerusalem and throughout Palestine, starting in 1920, but especially in 1929 and 1936. And he was always a great admirer of Hitler and of Nazi ideology from the moment that Hitler had taken power. And he cultivated Hitler, and he was invited in 1941 to come to Berlin. And the roots of, they formed an alliance. I would say that the inextricable link between the old fascism and the new, between the fascism of Nazi Germany and the fascist ideology that permeates much of the radical Islamic world today is the Mufti. Now, the genesis of this goes back to a meeting that took place on November 28, 1941, just 9 days before the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, when the Mufti, Haj Amin al-Husseini, met with Hitler in Germany and made a deal and formed an alliance with Hitler that continues to shape our world today.
Tell us about al-Husseini during the war years.
At Hitler's invitation, the Mufti spent the war years in Berlin. And in our book, the readers will learn how the Mufti ingratiated himself with his hero, and Hitler really was his hero, and other Nazi leaders. He became a member of Hitler's inner circle, a close friend of Eichmann and Himmler. Now, it's amazing, Michael, to realize that the Mufti visited Auschwitz, the Nazi death camp, and chastised the Nazi leadership for not being efficient enough in their extermination of the Jews.
What?
As we document, he actively collaborated with Hitler and really was one of the architects of Hitler's final solution that, of course, resulted in the mass murder of 6 million Jews. During World War II, al-Husseini was called the Führer of the Arab world. He recruited more than 100,000 Muslims in Europe to fight in Muslim divisions of the Waffen-SS. And it's amazing to realize he was responsible for the creation of the Muslim Waffen-SS unit that massacred 90%, 12,600 of Bosnia's 14,000 Jews. And to further recruitment here, he wrote a viciously anti-Semitic book entitled Islam and the Jews, which was distributed to Bosnian Muslim SS units during the war as part of his efforts to incite the murder of Bosnian Jews. He worked closely with Joseph Goebbels, the Third Reich's propaganda minister, and organized and planned Nazi propaganda broadcasts throughout the Arab world. And most of his very passionate pro-Nazi broadcasts were classically anti-Semitic, designed to incite hatred and violence against radical Islam's greatest enemy, the Jews. In one of the most infamous of his many such anti-Semitic broadcasts, the Mufti urged his fellow Arabs to murder their Jewish neighbors with the following admonition: kill the Jews wherever you find them, he proclaimed. This pleases God, history, and religion.
What about after the war?
The Mufti escaped indictment at Nuremberg, where he surely would have been convicted as a war criminal. He resurfaces in Cairo, Egypt, in 1946, where he's welcomed as a hero, and he becomes the mentor to a very young Yasser Arafat, who happens to be a distant cousin of his, and to a new generation of radical Islamic terrorists who are friends and associates of Arafat. Now, we document the details of his relationship with Arafat in rather great detail, but what's less known also, he was also another protege of the Mufti, was the uncle of Saddam Hussein. And we know that the Mufti met with Saddam Hussein's uncle on visits to Baghdad and presumably with Saddam Hussein himself in the late 50s and 1960s.
So al-Husseini's legacy is that he's a founding father of modern radical Islamic anti-Semitism. That's wonderful. It should be loved by the left.
Just as al-Husseini has been the inextricable link between the old fascism and the new, so, too, he has been the inextricable link between the old anti-Semitism and the new. In recent decades, as we document conclusively in this book, a new and insidious Islamic anti-Semitism, which has its roots in the anti-Jewish ideology of Nazism, has become pervasive throughout the Islamic Middle East. Much of this virulent anti-Semitism and anti-Semitic literature that is widespread today throughout the Islamic Middle East was inspired and promoted by one man, the Mufti. It was al-Husseini in the decades following World War II who introduced European anti-Semitism into the Middle East, promoting the Arabic translation and widespread distribution of notoriously anti-Semitic publications, including the Protocols of the Elders of Zion and Hitler's autobiography, Mein Kampf. The Protocols of the Elders of Zion, as your listeners may know, is an infamous forgery dating from Tsarist Russia that purported to document the existence of a secret Jewish conspiracy or cabal to rule the world. Despite the fact that the protocols had been discredited as a forgery even before the 1920s, they continued to be accepted as authoritative scholarship through much of the Islamic world. They were inspired and promoted by al-Husseini, and as a result of that, the protocols have been publicly praised and recommended by various monarchs, presidents, and other political and intellectual leaders of radical Islam. Former Egyptian President Nasser and King Faisal of Saudi Arabia, for example, praised the book and recommended that it be widely read. And King Faisal actually ordered all Saudi hotels to have copies of the protocols as bedtime reading and often gave copies of the Tsarist forgery to the guests of his regime. And one of the most amazing anecdotes is that when former U.S. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, who of course is Jewish, visited the Saudi capital in the early 1970s, he was one of the many visiting diplomats to receive a copy of the protocols of the Elders of Zion from King Faisal.
Unbelievable to me.
The protocols were serialized in a leading Tehran newspaper during the Khomeini regime and became a number one Iranian bestseller. Now, Hitler's Mein Kampf, another favorite anti-Semitic publication of the Mufti and his proteges, has similarly enjoyed a wide and appreciative radical Islamic audience in recent decades. When Mein Kampf was republished, and this is amazing, Michael, to realize, by Yasser Arafat's Palestinian National Authority in 2001, shortly after the September 11th terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, it achieved immediate bestseller status throughout much of the Arab world. New Arabic translations and editions of Mein Kampf have recently appeared in Turkey, Lebanon, and Saudi Arabia. Indeed, what's amazing to realize, today there are more Arabic editions of Mein Kampf than German.
Are you kidding?
In Icon of Evil, we provide unequivocal evidence that al-Husseini's actions and writings have served and continue to serve as the inspiration not only to the late Yasser Arafat, but to the leaders of Hamas, Hezbollah, al-Qaeda, and other terrorist organizations pledged to destroy Israel and the United States. His unholy legacy of anti-Semitism and anti-Jewish violence and terrorism and anti-Western and anti-American terrorism has been an enduring one. In the 60 years since the Holocaust, Haj Amin al-Husseini, who was not only the founding father of the radical Palestinian national movement, he has been and remains the inspiration for the leaders of the PLO, of Hamas, of Hezbollah, al-Qaeda, and other radical Islamic groups in their campaigns of violence and terror against Israel, the United States, and their allies and friends. The terrorism, the fanaticism, and ruthlessness of the Palestine National Movement reflect the enduring legacy and influence of the Mufti. Today, more than 30 years after his death, he died peacefully in 1974 in the Middle East. Haj Amin al-Husseini deserves recognition as the icon of evil that he was, as the father of radical Islamic anti-Semitism and terrorism, once again, as we know it today. As we document in our book, the radical Islam that the Mufti and his followers espoused during the 1930s and 1940s has today become dominant in much of the Islamic world and has continued to be the ideological source and inspiration for global anti-Semitism, jihad, and terrorism throughout the latter half of the 20th century and into the 21st. And we argue that the challenge of terror from radical Islam is the great issue of our time. As Adolf Hitler and Haj Amin al-Husseini were decisively defeated in their day, the new icons of evil must be unconditionally vanquished in ours.
Rabbi Dallin, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you so much for having me on your show. I was delighted to be your guest today, and I'm tremendously appreciative. Savage.
Story for you to close out the hour from Canada. Canada bus passenger stabs and decapitates seatmate. Now, the authorities, the Canadian Mounties, which, of course, the word Mountie today in Canada, when it refers to the police, takes on an all new meaning. The Canadian Mounties refused to identify the man who decapitated his seatmate. A traveler aboard a Greyhound bus repeatedly stabbed and then decapitated his seatmate, pausing during the attack in central Canada to display the head to passengers who had fled in horror, witnesses an official said Thursday. A 40-year-old man, no name, no ethnicity, man was arrested after the grisly slaying route to Winnipeg, Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Well, if these guys stopped mounting and started doing police work, maybe there wouldn't be grisly slayings. But the hero here is a truck driver. You have to read the whole story to see what happened. No motive. The victim was 19, sleeping with headphones. Seatmate suddenly began stabbing him as the bus travels a desolate stretch of the Trans-Canada Highway, a dozen miles from Portage-la-Prairie. No exchanges were heard between the two men prior to the violence, according to witnesses. We heard this blood-curdling scream and turned around, and the guy was standing up, stabbing this guy repeatedly like 40 or 50 times. The driver stops the bus when he becomes aware of the savagery going on aboard, and passengers run off. The suspect appeared to be methodically cutting into the victim's body. When he was attacking him, he was calm, like he was at the beach. There was no rage or anything. He was just like a robot stabbing the guy. The bus driver and another passenger and a trucker at the scene reboarded to see what was going on. The suspect had the victim on the floor of the bus and was cutting his head off and gutting him like a deer. The attacker turned toward the three men, and the three men quickly left the bus, blocking the door as the attacker, again, no identity, no ethnicity, no race, no religion, no identity, because he doesn't look like a I'm sure right away that he's not a blonde blue eye. You want to bet me on this? Mark it down. He doesn't look like Timothy McVeigh, which is why they're not releasing the picture immediately with his mother. The reason that the Canadian Mounties and the press in Canada are not at his mother's door is because he doesn't meet the, let us say, the picture well enough. So the three men leave the bus. They block the door, and the attacker slashes at them through an opening. The three men secure the door to prevent the man from fleeing. The driver disables the vehicle after the attacker tries to drive it away. As the three men guarded the door with a crowbar and a hammer, the attacker went back to the body on the bus and calmly came to the front of the bus to show off the head. The man drops the head and went back and started cutting the body. The man later taunted the police and dropped the head in front of them. Well, I won't read you any more of the details. You got the picture. They said the truck driver, the bus driver, and the other man prevented anyone else from being hurt. They were very brave, said the Mountie. Mountie, of course, got there after it was all over. The Mountie had the body bag and the Mountie had the chalk. So the Mountie can go back to doing what Mounties do. And that's it. There's nothing more we could say. This is the world you live in. A little bus ride for the summer? Terrific. No identity, no name, no nothing. Now, don't rush to judgment of any kind. You know, we wouldn't say this is terrorism or anything like that. We have no way to jump to that conclusion, nor am I suggesting we do. It's just curious to me that there's no picture, no name of the man. It's being withheld, you know. Let us see what else is in the wonderful news in the North American continent today. McCain accuses Obama of playing politics. Well, that's true. U.S. toll in Iraq hits all-time low as month ends. I guess that would be good news if it wasn't for the twistos in the media. They're making it sound like it's bad news. Man accused of killing and dismembering girlfriend. Canada bus passenger stabs, decapitates seatmate. I don't know why they have to use the word mate, but I guess that's what they're taught in journalism school. Make it sound sort of a domestic dispute. Seatmate. Everything have to turn into a mate. Let's see what else is in the news. On MichaelSavage.com, a website that many of you come to rely upon for entertainment value only, not for the stories. Now, I don't write the stories. They come from all of the best sources around. But since it's associated with my name, the news isn't true. So if the headline says 1 in 5 members of British Parliament have mental illness, according to a psychiatrist who studied them, you could discount that. And it's probably false. It's probably 4 out of 5. In this country, it would be 6 out of 5. If I say that Pelosi is acting like Mussolini because she wants the unfairness doctrine, you know I'm right. If I tell you that a liberal federal judge appointed by Bill Clinton tossed out my lawsuit against CAIR, you'll understand why Judge Ilston is called a liberal judge and why we must stop appointing activist judges to the courts who enact political agendas. And if you want to help me file an appeal and save freedom of speech, go to MichaelSavage.com and please do so. Then there are 20 audio clips of Savage's actual comments that did so, closely linked with George Soros. 1-800-449-8255, phone number, MichaelSavage.com website. Anything is fair game. So I'll now take any calls that you would like on global warming, Iran, the movie, the head cutting off, whatever. Let me go to the bottom of my website here before I got to wipe that away. Minuteman rally at SF City Hall calls for Mayor Newsom to resign. But the important thing is the picture on the bottom of my website. You'll see the third world, the faces of third world hate, as opposed to the picture that Wolf Blitzer and those in the girly media want you to believe the immigrant community is composed of. You'll see the one face after another saying, this is our country, we'll kick you out. You are an immigrant to my country, get out. And then, strangely enough, if you look carefully at the picture, although you see the normal third world faces screaming and yelling with hate signs in Spanish, there's a curious picture of, within the picture of a white gentleman with sunglasses who looks like he just stepped off an IRT subway from New York, strangely enough, right in the middle of the crowd, off to the left of the picture. Now, I don't know who this man is, but I'd pay $100 for anyone who could identify him tomorrow. Go to the picture. If you know who he is, if he's an activist, if he's a lawyer who eggs on the third worlders, I'd like to know his name so we can identify him for his own protection. Above it is Savage broke this case when it was first reported. They defecate on their crops in Mexico. So I knew immediately where the tomatoes are coming from. With the salmonella strain as way back as the 9th of June, 08. You didn't have to be a genius, but it took the government only 2 months to figure it out. And countless, probably millions of dollars. But wait, they're not through yet. Now they're going to run a white label, white ribbon commission of schmucks from the best universities who know nothing of what they're talking about, who travel and investigate and go to Mexico and meet and go to the Marriott and have drinks and have another meeting. And they'll figure out that what I said for nothing was more correct than what they're going to tell you for something. Why? Because common sense is gone in America. This is the Savage Nation. You're lucky.
Savage.